KFSR presents First Ladies Focus, the personal stories behind people who love Fresno State. Featuring Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro, and KFSR Program Director, Julie Logan, 90.7 KFSR.
Good morning and welcome. I'm Julie Logan, along with my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Julie.
We're excited to have another very special guest with us today, and as always, I'll let you make the introductions.
Well, it's a beautiful day here on campus, and I really appreciate our guests coming in and spending some time with us. Her name is Deborah Adigian-Astone, and she's currently serving as the Interim Vice President for Administration and is also the Associate Vice President for Auxiliary Operations and Enterprise Development. That is a mouthful. Thank you, Debbie, for joining us.
Good morning. I'm so excited to be here.
Now, when you meet people, you don't have to recite that whole thing.
No, thank goodness. I just have to decide which business card I give them.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, because you can't put everything on one. Thank you again for joining us today. We have a lot to cover. I always see you running around the campus, and you've stepped up in so many ways to help support President Castro and myself since we arrived here at Fresno State. And I didn't have an idea of exactly how many hats you wear until I read your bio. But before we get into your professional accomplishments, which are many, let's talk about your connection to the Valley and growing up here in the Fresno area. Tell us about your home life.
Well, I've just been so fortunate. I have a great family, and growing up here in Fresno, went to elementary school and middle school, and then graduated from Fresno High. And when it was time to decide where I was going to go to college, my mom said, okay, where are you applying? You know, you need to apply to, you know, different schools. Mm-hmm. Where do you want to go? And I said, I'm only applying to Fresno State.
Oh,
it's the only place I want to go. And she's like, well, don't you want to, you know, experience going away to school and living, you know, in the dorms and doing what, you know, because for my mom, she was the first one in her family to go to college, and she left Tacoma, Washington, and went down to Whittier College, and that was a big move.
Oh, uh-huh.
And she wanted me to have that same experience, and I said, I want to go to Fresno State. That's the only place I want to go. I said, if they don't accept me, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Oh, no. Well, you touched on your mom's support for you furthering your education, and your dad's name was George.
Yes.
And your mom, Shenora. You said that your mom was a kindergarten teacher. So
yes.
Does that mean that before you were going to kindergarten, she had you guys practicing all of your letters? And
always. And she was always so great with us. And she stayed home. She was a stay-at-home mom when my older sister was born and didn't go back to teaching until I was in second grade. She wanted to make sure I was set. And in fact, she even had me start kindergarten a little bit early because I'm a November birthday. And so I didn't start in September, but they tried me out because they wanted to make sure, you know, I was going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, oh, she's fine, because she knew that she had worked with me, and it only took one day, and the principal and kindergarten teacher said, yes, she can stay. She'll be fine. She can catch
up.
That's
so great. I know what it is to be an early baby, because my birthday's in December, and I used to watch that bus go by. I couldn't wait for my day to get on it. And so my mom went and did the same thing that your mom did. She asked if I could go ahead and start, even though I was way past the cutoff date for my birthday. And they gave me a chance. And I was always the youngest one in my class.
Always. And it's okay, except, you know, when everyone's driving and you're the last one to get your
right.
license.
But my mom said, if you don't let her go to school, that will be the problem, because this kid is ready. And you said that your dad was a barber. So to be a barber, I imagine you have to be a person who really develops long-term relationships with your clients, and you're very trusted. I mean, that takes a lot of trust to let somebody get at your hair. But you were telling me that your dad was a more of a quiet type person.
Yes. His barbershop was in the Crocker Bank building downtown, and the building's still there. And I remember being young before I started school, and my mom, we would go down and visit him and go up on the elevator, and that was a big deal. And,
Oh, yeah.
You know, so he did a lot of, you know, attorneys and physicians. You know, at that time downtown, that was where everything was happening.
Yes.
And then we'd go on the Fulton Mall and go shopping and, you know, walk and do that. And so it was, we kind of made it a day to go visit dad at the barbershop. And now it's kind of interesting now to see barbershops kind of becoming popular again and
yes,
coming kind of
absolutely.
Back into vogue a little bit, that, you know, to do the shaves and to do the men's haircuts. And that was a big deal then. And then he would also go out to the National Guard on the weekends do some of the cuts out there. And that was important for him to provide that service. And I'm so fortunate to have both of my parents so much part of my life and a part of my children's lives.
That's wonderful.
They live close by to us. And so it's just always been a strong connection. I'm just very fortunate to have great parents and a great family.
When you were in Fresno High, were you involved in extracurricular activities? What was your high school experience like?
You know, I was, but I wasn't one of those where I was like this, you know, super student leader or involved. I mean, I was in student council. Mm-hmm. But what I did is I kept score for our baseball team. That was my passion because my brother played baseball and I would go to all his games because, you know, the little sister, I had to tag along and go wherever my siblings were going. And so at Fresno High, they needed a scorekeeper. And so I learned to keep score. And I did that for 4 years.
Wow.
And so I was active in that, but I was active in student council. And obviously, grades were very important. But I wasn't necessarily, I mean, I wasn't in the most popular group. I wasn't in the group, you know, that it was involved in everything. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't know what I wanted to do. Mm. But I knew I wanted to go to college. Mm-hmm. I knew that was the next step. And I knew that was what was expected. But I didn't know really what I wanted to do. But my mom and my parents and family said, you know, just keep going and you'll figure it out. It's okay you don't have a major when you decide to go to college. It's okay. Yes. You'll figure it out.
Well, you're exposed to so many new and different things when you do get to college. It's perfectly fine that you find your passion here. So you received your bachelor's degree in business administration with an emphasis on marketing and management, which seems like such a perfect fit for you. How did you come to know that that's the direction that you wanted to go?
Well, you know, I took all of my general education. And so then finally in my second year, and as I was needing to declare my major, I said, well, what am I going to declare? And I said, you know what? You can't go wrong with a business degree. And then when I started taking the business courses, found that, you know, with marketing and management and just that really just I enjoyed it.
It was a good fit.
And I knew it was a good fit. And, you know, the classes and the professors and all the professors I had in the business school. And it wasn't the Craig School of Business then. Mm-hmm. That was before. But it had so many great professors and folks who just inspired me to say, you know, you can do this. And whatever you decide to do, these are just good foundation for anything that you want to do, whichever career and path you decide to go. And at first I thought, great, I'm going to go out and get this big corporate job and I'm going to go out and just, you know, I'm going to succeed and I'm going to be, you know, have those put on my suit and go to work every day. And, you know, when I was getting time to graduate, I said, you know what, I'm not sure what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And then that's when I had been working on campus during the whole time when I was here at Fresno State. So that kind of gave me an opportunity to say, you know, maybe there's an opportunity for me to stay and maybe that's something I want to do because I knew I wanted to pursue and get my master's degree.
You mentioned you were working on campus. Yeah. You've been working for Fresno State one way or another for 27 years, and you started as a student assistant in the Office of Facilities Planning.
Right.
So that sounds like that was your first love right there.
It was.
You
it
just
was,
couldn't get away from
couldn't
it.
Couldn't get away from it. And, you know, when I started, it was a great job to have on campus, and it was great because I got to learn the campus. So being in facilities planning, one of my first jobs was go out and find, you know, these spaces and find out, you know, is it being used as an office space, as a storage space, as a lecture space? Because we kept a database of all the rooms on campus.
Oh.
So what a great way for me to go and learn the campus, learn the buildings. So as a student, I knew where all my classes were, where all the faculty offices were. I knew where everybody was.
You were never lost.
Never lost.
That's great. So once you were in the master's degree program, did you continue to work while you were doing the master's program?
So I graduated, got my degree in 1988, and then immediately there was a position that became available actually in facilities planning, which is the office where I worked, because at that time the campus was starting to grow. The Peters Business Building was just being finished. So as a when I was a student assistant, the building was under construction. So I got to be involved and go to construction meetings and kind of learn what was going on. Mm-hmm. But up to that point in time, there hadn't been a new building on campus. I think the science building was in the mid-70s.
Wow.
So this is 1988. We really hadn't had a new building in so many years. And this was the next major academic facility. So to be able to see that come out of the ground.
Pretty and exciting.
Then, and then the growth on campus and then the state capital program was growing. And so the office needed another position, an analyst position. And so I applied and got the position, and then I was able to stay working in the office and then started my master's degree a year later and also got married about the same time.
I was going to ask, your husband's name
you didn't
is
have
Mark.
Enough on your plate.
That's right. Let's get a little bored.
Your husband's name is Mark. Tell us how you and Mark met.
So we met here at Fresno State. So we were in the Greek system together, and he was student body president our last year when we were dating. And so then we started dating in 1986 and then got married in 1989. So we wanted to finish, we wanted to graduate and then be able to have our careers and then start, you know, get married and start our life. So it's been great and to be able to have that passion for Fresno State. And we always said, we go, we're going to be, when we graduate, we said, we're going to be part of the Red Wave. We're going to be Bulldogs for life. We were lifetime members of the Alumni Association right away. And so we've always just been very involved and very dedicated to Fresno State and to our community. It's just, it's part of who we are. Yes. And since we met here, I think that also you had that common bond.
There are a lot of love stories that happen here at Fresno State.
I didn't like him at first, though.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
So what was it that he did that changed your mind?
I don't know. I met him because we obviously our houses would do things together, and I'd heard that he wanted to take me on a date, and I'm like, well, I don't even know him, and I was dating somebody else at the time, and it was a spring break, and he called and talked to my dad, and I think my dad scared him, and my dad goes, why did this Mark Astone call for you? Why is he calling? And I said, I don't know. I think I know why. So we ended up going out on a few dates, and then kind of from there started dating more seriously. So,
well, that was pretty respectful for him to call your dad.
Yes, and he always has been. And figure, well, if he can get through my dad, that's okay.
I ought to give him a chance. Huh?
Especially an Armenian father. And especially with him not being Armenian. So
you mentioned that you were in a sorority. Tell us about your sorority and some of your experiences. And do you still have relationships with your sorority sisters today?
I do. That was one of the things that my mom really encouraged me to do. She said, if you're not going to live on campus and live in the residence halls, you're going to join a sorority. I don't care which one you join, but you're going to have that experience, because she had that experience. And she wanted me to. And I said, okay. So I did. I joined Delta Gamma sorority. And some of my girlfriends were in the house from my childhood friends from church and Sunday school from school. And so we had that common bond. And that's really where I think I really got exposed to the student leadership side and being involved. And so I ended up being president of the house and also was on Panhellenic. And so those experiences in the house was just so amazing and really, I think, helped inspire me and give me the confidence to say I can go out and do this. And I, you know, have these skills that hopefully can contribute and how I can give back. But it was just such a positive structure and it was just a great opportunity. And I'm still in touch with my sorority sisters today. Mm-hmm. Many of them are still my very close friends.
That's great.
And we just had Founders Day a few weeks ago. And then it's great because I know other people from the Fresno State community as well. That were DGs. And in fact, our new vice president for advancement, Paula Castadio, is a DG, and we were in the house together. So we have different common bonds.
Well, it's nice to know that there are other ways that you learn leadership and that you further your ability to work well with people outside of the classroom. Mm-hmm. Being at Fresno State, you're constantly experiencing ways that you can help and give back, and especially the way our campus is with the emphasis on volunteering and service. And just very proud of all the different ways that I see our students step up and contribute back to the community, and also that they look out for each other, that they're looking out for each other.
It's great. And I think that's what's made it so special, being able to have a career here at Fresno State, is to meet the students, to work with the students, and to see what they go on and do and the amazing things and the contributions they make. And for example, Ryan Jacobson was on our association board when he was a student leader and student body president. And, you know, now to see him and what he's done in his career and in the community. And so you just get to see these students come through and they've just make such a difference. And it's great to know that maybe you helped in some little way, in some little part at some point. But to see what they're going on and doing and representing Fresno State is so rewarding.
Where do you see as far as the importance of mentors, especially for young women on our campus? Do you mentor any students? Or are you involved in any
way? I'm involved in the staff mentor program, but haven't necessarily directly or officially maybe mentored any students. But I think, too, when we work with students, even if it's on a project or an initiative, or
it's
even
not
when
formal
they come in,
mentoring.
Right, exactly. If they come in and want to do an interview for their, you know, MCJ class, and I have them come in, and then if I can help them or make them feel comfortable or help them succeed in whatever maybe their curriculum tasks might be at hand, and to let them know that, you know, we do want to help. We're here to help.
Yes.
Our door is always open. That's why we're here. We're not just here to sit in an office and whatever you think we do every day. That's not, we're here for the students.
Right.
And so when I get to meet with the students or help them or interact with them or work on a project with them, I think maybe, like you said, it's informal mentoring, but that's really where I feel inspired and most rewarding and how we can give back and how we can help.
I think it's great, too, for students to see that an alum invested back into the campus and how big a part of the campus you are with all of the different responsibilities that you have. As the Vice President for Auxiliary Operations and Enterprise Development, tell us about your responsibilities with you do the dining services, you do the Kennel Bookstore, and then Save Mart Center. Yeah. That's a monster in and of itself for all of the little moving parts that you have. How are you able to balance all of that and do it at the level that you feel is up to par with the way that you operate?
Well, there's obviously we have a great, great team of colleagues. Mm-hmm. And you're only as good as those that you surround yourself with. And mm-hmm. so I'm just very lucky to work with a great group of colleagues. At the same time, I think there's some core set of skills. You've got to be organized. I've got, you know, I learned project management skills. Mm-hmm. And I think you've got to be a real people person. You've got to be human, and you've got to be able to just always kind of be able to know, okay, what's the next task? You know, being proactive, looking ahead. Mm-hmm. But I think it's being able to balance all the different responsibilities and aspects. We have a huge operational infrastructure that we have, mm-hmm. But always making sure that we're keeping it student-centered and why we're doing what we're doing. But I think it's making sure that you do have the right team and you have the right people in the right places and that we're all going in the same direction together. Mm-hmm. And I always tell people, I said, look, I've done everything. I've answered phones. There is no task that is ever right. That I won't do or haven't done.
Everybody rolls up their sleeves.
Absolutely.
And gets in.
And that's the way I think we've always worked on in our team and mm-hmm. in our organizations and places where I've worked and how Fresno State works. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, you just whatever we need to do, we learn, and some things may be new and different from us where we may have to change, but that's okay. But I think always staying positive, energetic, and remembering why we're here, that we're always here for the students, mm-hmm. and all the other stuff really doesn't matter. It's just we have to figure out how to work best
how
together.
How to best serve
right.
them.
But I have a lot of lists, and I keep lists in a lot of different places, and I forget where I put my list. But it all works.
Well, you completed the management development program at Harvard Graduate School of Education. When did you do that, and what did that entail?
I think that was back in 1992, and it was a two-week program. Mm-hmm. And my supervisor at the time, Vice President Ben Quillian, nominated me to do that. And at the time when he did, he goes, you need to do this program. And I said, I can't do this. I go, this is, you know, way beyond what I'm able to do. And, you know, being gone from the family that long time and, you know, going back to Harvard, oh my gosh, I've never been to Harvard. You know, this mm-hmm. is such a, and it was the best opportunity for me because I got to interact with colleagues. And I think what it was is they saw that my career was going to start to grow mm-hmm. and expand. And before that happened, to be able to interact with other colleagues from across the country at kind of that, you know, managerial level and be able to learn and work with faculty there and to say, you know, these are some of the tools and skills and how we have to think differently and think more broad and not just in maybe what area of expertise we had, but how to understand the whole more, you know, broader spectrum of higher education, management in higher education. Mm-hmm. So, and it was a great opportunity. And I look back now and I don't know that I realized at the time what a big deal it was to be able to go and have that opportunity. And it was, and it made such a difference. It was hard being gone.
Yes.
My older son was young at the time. And so my husband had dad duty, but it all worked. And they're very supportive of me doing it. And it was a lot of work, a lot of preparation before. I was reading these thick books on the plane and before, you know, trying to be prepared. I'm supposed to have all these articles read, you know, and I'm like, who has time to do this?
Before there was digital,
exactly.
Right? And going forward, you've seen a lot of growth on the campus
yes.
during your tenure and a lot of big buildings. And now we have a lot of projects on the campus where we're focusing on the infrastructure.
Right.
How do you feel about the direction that the campus is going now? And do you see it as a good foundation for the campus of the future for our students? Because it seems like with technology and their needs changing, the type of systems we have in place have to adapt.
Right.
How do you know exactly what needs to be prioritized?
Well, you know, it's good. I mean, we work obviously very collaboratively with, you know, campus-wide students, faculty, and staff, and obviously have a lot of great committees and working very closely, you know, obviously with our faculty mm-hmm. and knowing what the needs are. But I think, you know, we had that growth period where we had a lot of new buildings and everybody thought, okay, now we need another new building. But I think what's really exciting now is we're looking internally, just like the city's general plan is, and saying, mm-hmm. okay, instead of expanding beyond our footprint, now we need to look at infill mm-hmm. and what buildings are the buildings we need to invest in that they have good bones, mm-hmm. but they haven't been kept modernized or updated or don't have the infrastructure or technology infrastructure that we need now. Mm-hmm. And so I think what we're seeing now is a different focus of reinvestment, but so important because we have a lot of great buildings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have students already, you know, sometimes are concerned about how it takes to get from the east end of campus to the west end.
Yes.
And so the more that we can do infill within the campus and modernizing what we have a lot of great buildings and they're well maintained, but in some cases they're just aged and they haven't been, the deferred maintenance is just huge on mm-hmm. our campus. But since President Castro's been here and the focus and our facilities team, we're starting to make a difference. There's a long road yet, but it's exciting to see that change because we have to leave that legacy and leave that in place for those that come after us.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't stop addressing it and saying, well, no, that maybe doesn't look as exciting as a new building. Yes, mm-hmm. but it has to be addressed. And we need to make sure that we're investing in our existing facilities because we can't support new buildings anymore. I mean, we really do have to look within and make sure that we're keeping up what we have. Because there's a lot of classrooms in some of those buildings that our students are in, and some of them look the same way they did when I was a student. So,
oh boy,
a lot of them have been, you know, upgraded, but there's a lot of work yet to do. But that's just as exciting when I see. And I was on a tour last week and looking at some labs that have been modernized in the Engineering West building, which I hadn't been over there probably in about 15 years, and it's amazing what can be done.
Yeah.
So there's nothing that can't be done. Uh-huh. Just because a building might be 50 years old, it doesn't mean that it can't look just like a new building. So that's a challenge.
It sounds like a big challenge, but I'm confident you're up for it. You have two sons, Andrew,
yes.
who's 22, and Matthew, who's 14.
Yes.
Tell us what you like to do with the boys and Mark when you get a moment to yourself. What are some of the favorite things that you like to do?
Well, we spend a lot of time at baseball games. Mm-hmm. Andrew's played baseball for a number of years and is still playing. And
your brother's love for baseball.
Yes, it's carried on. We're big Giants fans. Sorry, I know we have some Dodger fans in the house. So.
It's a good thing you learned how to keep score earlier in life.
That's right. And so when they're playing Little League, when you know the coaches would hear, oh, Debbie knows how to keep score. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll do it. And then using the tablet, then you know that technology is now there for keeping score. So I learned how to do that. But we do, we spend a lot of time with the boys. We try to get out of town once in a while. Doesn't always, you know, work with our two schedules between mm-hmm. Mark's schedule and mine. And we spend a lot of time with my family and just making sure that we're, you know, keeping the family unit together, which is really important. But love doing things with them. And we do try to travel. And we have a good group of friends that we try and take some trips with. But we stay pretty close to connected and don't go too far. But really enjoy the time with the boys because we know they're growing up and not always going to have that time with
them. That's it. It goes by really fast.
And you would think with 8.5 years apart, they wouldn't fight, but they do. So they love each other dearly, but they're their moments. Of course.
You wouldn't expect it to be any other way, right? A big project that you've been helping with on the campus is the Armenian Memorial.
Right.
Tell us about your involvement with that and what it means to you personally.
Well, I was just out there today, in fact, walking by, and it's really taking shape. And I think what it means for me, because my grandparents on both my mom's side and dad's side came over during the genocide. And in particular, my grandfather on my mom's side would tell us the stories because he came mm-hmm. over as a young child. His father, my great-grandfather, didn't make it. My great-grandmother brought her children over. Some children were already here in the States, and then my grandfather was the youngest. And I remember as a young child just sitting and listening to him tell the stories. And my mom taped it, thank goodness, that she did when my grandfather was telling us this. And to have this monument at Fresno State and the support from the university mm-hmm. and from our Armenian community wanting to see this happen, given obviously the large population of Armenians in our community. Mm-hmm. But that is so important because it was such a awful tragedy that to see the monument and have those memories and know what our ancestors had to endure
yes.
to come here because they wanted a better life for their family.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so many of the ethnic groups did. You know, coming through Ellis Island and all those stories that you hear because mm-hmm. they wanted a better life for their children, for their grandchildren, and the work ethic, the mm-hmm. work ethic of knowing we want to come, we know we need to work hard. That was never a question.
Right.
And I guess when I see the monument, those are all the reflections I have about all the sacrifices and what our ancestors had to endure mm-hmm. so that we could have what we have today. Mm-hmm. My grandfather's family was captured. Mm-hmm. And they weaved oriental rugs. They were in the oriental rug business. And the only way that they survived is because they were captured. They weaved an oriental rug for some of the soldiers because they could sell those. Mm-hmm. And then they were released. So when you have, and there's so many stories like that, mm-hmm. but that impression has always been with me since a young child. And my grandfather they came to this country and they acclimated. It wasn't all about just being Armenian. They wanted to make sure and acclimate. They were Americans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My grandfather, even, it's kind of a neat story, not to me, but my grandfather was so appreciative to be an American mm-hmm. that he weaved an oriental rug for President Eisenhower, who was president at the time.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's in President Eisenhower's library today.
That's so cool.
And it's an image of President Eisenhower, but it's an oriental rug that my grandfather wove. And so that's how important it was for the Armenians to be part and be able to have the opportunity to come to America.
And I think that having the memorial here on campus gives us a great starting point for you yes. to tell the stories again to your children and for other students who walk by and don't know what happened. It is a great way to start the conversation for someone who doesn't know.
No, right.
And it's also to remind us that it's not that far away,
no.
that those things are unfortunately are still going on
that's
in
right.
the world, and that, you know, we it's, have a responsibility
that's right.
to try and stop it whenever we can, but to be respectful to those who've been through it.
That's right. So it's very exciting to see it come to life and to what the meanings are of the sculpture and the monument. So we're so appreciative.
Share the day that the and time for the opening for the
yes,
memorial.
Yes, April 23rd at 7:30.
Okay.
And public is invited, and they want to do it in the evening because it's going to be unveiled and it's going to be spectacular. And the committee that's been working on this and our community members who've been working on this and the Armenian Studies Program and everyone, the students, everyone, and so appreciative of the university and its role in helping us make this happen. But it's truly been a community event.
Well, thank you for sharing that personal story and letting us know about your connection to it. We appreciate all your hard work on that project and on the many projects that you work with on campus. And we appreciate you being such a great example for our students of what they can do with a Fresno State degree
yes.
and how you can really give back. I've enjoyed getting to know you on a personal level since we've been here, and I look forward to more great things happening while we're here with you on our team.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I just have always valued this opportunity and love working at Fresno State and love working with President Castro and with you and the whole team. And it's just been, you know, as people say, well, you've been here so long. And I said, I know. I said, I never thought I would stay this long. I never thought my career would take on what it has. But it's because I've had just so great support. And it's a great campus. And I think we're just so fortunate to have Fresno State in our community.
Well, your passion for what you do shows in everything that you do. And thank you for joining us here today.
Thanks so much for the opportunity. Well, thanks again to our very special guest, Fresno State's Interim Vice President for Administration and the Associate Vice President for Auxiliary Operations and Enterprise Development, Deborah Adishan Astone. And of course, my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Thanks for joining us this morning, and please join us again next Sunday morning at 10 for another First Ladies Focus on KFSR. We're on the air at 90.7 FM and streaming worldwide at www.kfsr.org.
KFSR presents First Ladies Focus every Sunday morning at 10. For a complete program schedule, visit kfsr.org.